Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to a special off-grid edition of Advantage Connors, coming to you from somewhere deep in the jungles of Costa Rica. Your co-host, Brett Connors, as always. Jimmy, how's it going back there, stateside? What's going on with you?
Yeah, I'm still low-key in Santa Barbara. You are on an unbelievable vacation trip excitement. So I want to hear more about it, but good to be with you, and I'm glad you're safe. Everything's going well, and obviously you're having a good time. Tell me about it.
Yep, we're down here. We're solo. I heard a mini golden doodle barking there. She's been hanging with her grandparents. I got to get an update on that. But yes, we are on a vacation. We are in Costa Rica, first time ever coming to Central America, deep in the jungle, off the grid, about 4 hours from the Liberia airport. We're near the Arenal volcano. So it's this volcano that, what was it, 10 years ago it blew up? Was it 12, 15 years ago, Melina? Do you remember? It was 10 years ago it last erupted. So pretty recent. Some activity goes on there, but they've got some cool, like, you know, hotels, like resorts all around, like, the base of the volcano. There's a lot of these hot springs, you know, that kind of bring people in. There's a lot of animal life. So we're sitting here in this beautiful, beautiful balcony sitting on the back. I'll put a picture up later tonight to help promote the episode. But we're looking out. It's nothing but jungle. We got birds that come in, exotic birds. There's monkeys. There's howler monkeys, they're called, because they kind of howl at you. But our favorite is the sloths. They've got three or four or five, six, whatever it is, sloths around the grounds here. It's called Nayara Resorts, if anyone wants to check it out. There's three different resorts here in one. They're all kind of have their own little theme. We're at the gardens, and it's pretty sick. And right outside our door every day has been this sloth. His name's Tony the Sloth. He's one of the most famous sloths in all of Arenal. And Fortuna is the city that's close by, around the corner. So we've just been hanging out, going to the hot springs. We've been doing some day excursions out to check out the animals. We took like a little river kind of cruise where we go up and down and just kind of look at the wildlife, and you know, we had a little lunch and had like a little guide take us around, show us everything cool, and we've just been kind of laying low, you know, not trying to do too much, just interacting with the animals and hitting the hot springs and eating a lot of good food.
It doesn't sound like you're laying low. You're out you're not just sitting at home doing nothing. You're out looking around and going on excursions and all that and keeping busy, but it's got to be amazing. I mean, you know, for me, I mean, you've always been a traveler, Brad. Yeah, you know, you were traveling first when you were, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks old, and you know, going to the U.S. Open and then, you know, to Japan and so forth when, you know, right when you were born, and you still love it. But I mean, you finding and searching these places, these out of the way places, you know, to go to and to, you know, to get different experiences is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, do you research that or how do you go about that?
Yeah, just, you know, go online and had never really thought about coming to Costa Rica. You know, I'd always heard about it. And then a friend of ours just kind of mentioned it in passing. And we're like, hey, let's check it out. Why not? We went to Mexico 3 years ago. That was our last vacation. And we loved that. So we were kind of thinking like, hey, every time I've gone to Mexico, I've had fun. I mean, the people are always so nice to me and the food's great. And we always have a lot of fun, play good, great golf. So we thought we'd just go somewhere new, like Puerto Vallarta or Punta Mita in Mexico. But then someone says, hey, Costa Rica. So we checked it out. And Melina started doing some of her good research where she plants herself in front of the computer and starts just searching.
She's good at that.
Yeah,
she's
searching away. That. And we found this spot. And boy, is it a gem. It seems like a place that, you know, I would definitely suggest to other people and could definitely see myself coming back here again in the future.
Yeah, doesn't sound like a bad thing. Sometimes getting away, it clears your mind, and you know you're looking at something that's so different than your everyday. You know, wake up and get going in Los Angeles and going to work, and you know, people and cars and everything. You're so, you know, like you said on the introduction, you're off the grid,
mm-hmm.
It's a good mind clear.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to say it? It just takes your mind off of everything.
Yeah, it's just a different pace of life, and like we've been kind of unplugging. Like we're not hanging on the internet too much. I'm not really checking my emails that much. I kind of told everyone, hey, I might check in every 2 or 3 days, but don't expect a quick reply. But yeah, it's just nice to be. And it's like the nature, like the sound, like just mm-hmm. all the cicadas, you know, like the bugs and just everything. And just everything you hear, it's so neat because it's so much life just right outside the window. And just the people, man, like I've never been so treated so nice. Everyone here is so happy. You can just tell like how much they appreciate like coming to work. Like they all work at this really cool resort and have a chance to probably interact with a lot of, you know, people who come and go from all over the world. And you can just see how much they like appreciate their job and have fun working and like are always smiling. I've never, you know, been treated so nice. So it's really cool. So this is the first half of the trip. And then tomorrow we head to the beach. So we go to the West Coast. And that's where the golf comes
coach.
In.
I've been called a West Coach.
Yeah. So that's where the golf comes in. I said, Melina, look, if we go somewhere, we have to go somewhere where we can kind of split it up and have a couple days of golf. So we're going to the West Coast where they have a nice beach and a nice golf course where I'm going to play a couple days of that before we head on home.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. But you've been gone. I think you'll be gone overall about 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, right? Like 10, 11 days we're gone. There's a good amount of traveling just because it's, you know, you land and it's 5 or 6 hour flight and then you drive 4 hours, 3-4 hours. So there's a little bit, it takes a little bit to get there. So, but it's fun, man.
Well, you got your girl there. You got your girl, Melina there.
You got my girl. What are you, our girl. What are you talking about?
I do. Yeah. Well, I'm going to interrupt you because I know every time you say that she's at your feet, you know, while we're doing the, you know, the podcast, I'm sorry. She's at my feet right now, hanging with me. We're out back on her back patio. It's a beautiful evening. The sun's shining. It's about 68 degrees and we're chilling,
mm-hmm.
and talking to you. But, you know, today was the first day and Bella, you guys have been gone for about five or six days.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first day that, and you know, when you come up, Bella and Bogey, our little mini schnauzer,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they get right into it and, you know, chase and run and, you know, together. It's taken them a while to kind of start interacting.
Really?
You know, since you and Melina have been gone, she's kind of been, I'm going to stay by myself. I'm a little depressed. We get her, your mom and I, we go out, we take walks, we get her outside and all that. But, you know, as far as the interaction with Bogey, it's been a little quiet until today.
Okay, good.
And then, oh, my God. I'm surprised they're both still up. It is. I mean, they have had an amazing day just running and, you know, nonstop and going. And, and she's laying at my feet right now, Brett. I mean, I'm watching her. Her eyes are barely open. So. Yeah, but she's doing good, and nice. she's you know, you know she's part of the family. She, when you're gone, that's our grandbaby right now.
Oh, yeah.
So, she's in good hands. But yep. I'm happy to say that she's at my feet, you know, during this podcast, not yours.
You're making me jealous.
I know I would.
I don't mind sharing her, though. I know she's got a lot of love to give. It's funny that it takes her a couple of days to kind of warm up, but that's all right. That's all right. She has fun up there.
I mean, there's a lot of things going on. I read an article that tennis is trying to do a few things, trying to, you know, take the four Grand Slams and 10 1,000 tournaments and make it into what?
Like a super tour or something?
A super tour?
I guess.
Is that the way to say it?
I guess. I'm a little out of the loop, but yeah, it seems like they've been talking about that. I know they were... that there's been a lot of discussion in the last week, especially in Madrid, you know, now the Madrid's 2-week tournament, about the 10th Masters 1000. So I guess these are the, mm-hmm. these are the places that are up: Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Abu Dhabi, and Australia.
My goodness gracious.
Right. It seems like it would probably be one of the countries with lots of money to spend, and Saudi Arabia definitely has lots of that. So they seem to be the front runner, and it seemed like some info might have leaked saying like, hey, they are, you know, they did get it. And then I saw like something that came out earlier today. ATP did not confirm the information about holding this January Masters in Saudi Arabia. So they're saying hasn't been confirmed yet, but it seems like it probably will be confirmed. At least they're the front runner as of this recording.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to, you know, from my standpoint, to see how the young players have an opportunity, you know, to become good or to have an opportunity to move up and to play in those Masters 1000s and the Grand Slams. And, you know, are they going to get rid of a lot of tournaments? You know, a lot of the smaller tournaments that give guys a chance. I mean, you know, going back to the late 60s and, you know, the early 70s. I mean, I played a lot of those tournaments, you know, to go and have a chance to get a win and to, you know, to make my reputation and so forth. Are they taking all that away?
Yeah.
How's that gonna work? Where young kids can come up and have a chance?
Yeah.
You know, to become something. You know, are you happy just with three or four guys and hope they just carry you?
Yeah.
You know, because it seems like that's what they've been happy with the last 23 years. you know.
Right.
Is that right or wrong? Am I right or wrong saying that?
Yeah. I don't know what the details are, how it's all going to be ironed out, but it seems like they're trying to create some sort of super tour, some sort of realigning, let's just say, of the current schedule. Like, there's some tournaments this year that I think have already happened that it's the last year of it, no matter what. Like, I think Estoril's done, like, no matter what. It's off the calendar next year. There might even be one or two others. I'm not totally sure.
But Estoril's been around for years, Brad.
Yeah. But what about, like, the idea that we always talk about where there's, like, five events in a week? And then it splits the talent up, and then like one
diluting.
Guy,
you know, it yeah. dilutes the talent. You're well, right.
So
You're
then,
100%
like
right.
on some ways, I feel like it could be a positive if like they figure it all out. I'm not saying like I agree with how you know any of it. I'm a little out of the loop right now as to what's going on, but I've been texting with my buddy Nico Pereira, and he was just telling me mm-hmm. a little bit like, hey, there's a lot of stuff going on this week about you know this 10th Masters. And Saudi Arabia seems to be in the middle of all these new things talking about the future. Right. I mean, no matter what it is with the ranking sponsorship or the women's finals being there and the ATP next gen is there. And so there's more and more influence coming from that part of the world, let's just say.
Well, I wonder if that means that every tournament now will be 128 draw. To give the young players, you know, that get through the qualifying, you mm-hmm. know, with a qualifying. You know, like a U.S. Open or like a Wimbledon or whatever, where you can qualify. But, you know, it's 128 draws. So every tournament now is going to be 2 weeks.
Right.
Is that possible?
It's
going to be interesting to see how they handle that. And because, you know, the money, you know, if it's coming from Saudi Arabia is going to be big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, the obviously the top guys are going to make, make the money. But how are the young guys coming up going to have a chance to not only make their reputation, but also make a living?
Right.
It'll be interesting. You know,
yep.
It'll be interesting to see how they handle it. So anyway, you're way far away. You're not in L.A. anymore. You're way far away now, and we'll get in more into this when you get closer.
But, there'll be more info coming out, I'm sure, as this tournament goes on. And it is a little weird, these Masters 1000s now that are 2 weeks. Like the ones with men and women make sense. I mean, you know, a little bit, but then it's like, but then a slam is 2 weeks. So then it's like, you're not, that used to be like this, wow, this 2 weeks is like a big deal. But now all these other tournaments are kind of 2 weeks, you know, like 12 days or whatever it is. But I don't know. It seems like tennis is definitely going through a transitional period. Like this 5 or 10 years, when we look back on it, you know, in the future, it's like, it's not going to look like how it's looked for the last like 50 years.
Have they taken the speciality, that's a big word for me, by the way, out of the Grand Slams?
Yeah, I mean,
the importance, before the Grand Slams, I mean, everybody, you know, you played and you wanted to win, and I went out and I wanted to win every match. But once you got to the Grand Slams, oh my God, it was a different everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, have they taken that away from it, or have they added more to that?
Yeah, I still think the Slams are the Slams. Like, no matter what, everyone's going to want to win those over every other tournament. Some people can say they want to win the Olympic medal, gold medal more, but I still don't buy that. I feel like slams are where it's at.
I don't buy that either.
I don't know. I think it's maybe just adding almost like more importance to Masters somehow. Like maybe the field's bigger, like it's longer. I don't know. But it's definitely going to be fun to watch how it plays out, and just to watch everyone flip-flop with their opinion, you know, or their takes, where like a year ago.
You know that's going to happen, right?
A year ago it was one way, and then, hey, it's all good now or whatever. So it'll be fun.
Yep. Well, you're far away, and I don't want to. I know you're busy and all that.
Oh, we got time.
Any good questions come up?
Yep, we got time for some questions. We got a couple good ones here. We have to pay off my man Daniel C. Nestor, who also picked Scottie Scheffler. I did not see his email with his question before last week's show, so we owe him a question here. Jimmy, first of all, I'd like to say hello. Hope all is well with you and your family. Unfortunately, I do not know how to leave a voice note, therefore I will just ask this following question. Okay, it's an easy one. Out of all of your victories throughout your career, which one was the sweetest? I think that's important. Most important, best, but sweetest is different. Like, I feel like sweetest has a little revenge maybe connotation mixed in there.
Yeah. I want to answer that twice.
Okay.
And my first one was my most important and sweetest was when I was 17 and I was playing the Pacific Southwest in Los Angeles, which was like 2 weeks after the U.S. Open back in, 1970. And I played Roy Emerson, who had just gotten to the semifinals and was one of the top players at that time. And I happened to beat him in the first round of that tournament. That was probably my most important victory to allow myself to say, I'm coming. I've kind of, you know, keep working, keep trying, keep grinding, keep trying to improve, keep listening, keep doing all that, and better things will happen.
Right.
And that's when I was 17. My sweetest was winning the 82 Wimbledon, because I went for 3 years, and it was 79, and I had a much better gift than winning anything in 79, and that was you.
Mm-hmm.
And then 80 and 81, where, you know, I did not win a Grand Slam. And even though I was winning 5 or 6 tournaments a year, that I had been written off. My time is over. I was too little. I wasn't, you know, the two-handed back end was shit, you know, and, you know, everything they'd said since I've been, you know, a young kid. And coming back and winning Wimbledon after being written off and beating, there's your golden doodle. There she goes.
Nice.
And beating Mac in the finals of Wimbledon, where, you know, on his best surface, which was grass. And he was the number one player in the world, and had taken my spot you know, at that place, and to come back to have won that, that was probably my sweetest victory. To have reestablished myself, you know, as a contender, and then I had a good run for another couple of years after that, to have played some good tennis in my 30s, and to, you know, been at the top of the game. But I think that was my sweetest victory, because it not only reestablished, you know, me as a top player, but also, and you know, Brett, you know, I got even with a lot of people after that too. Yeah. You know, so, you know, I hate to keep going back and saying that, but getting even was a good thing for me, you know, because it drove me and pushed me, to try to be better and to do more, that even I didn't think I was able to do, but at least I was trying and was pushing myself. And hey, listen, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, but, that time it did.
Yeah. Revenge can be a great motivator. There's nothing better than shoving it in someone's face or proving someone wrong when they've doubted you in some way in life.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, you said it better than I could have.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with their internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is no matter what size you're looking to be, if you're small, if you're medium-sized, or if you're already in the big leagues, Shopify's got the tools to help you every step of the way. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify's the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. So here's the best part, guys. Listeners of Advantage Connors can sign up for their $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Connors, all lowercase. So just go to shopify.com/Connors now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Connors. All right, let's get back to the show.
All right, let's move on. Sean Kevin. I like that. Two first names, Sean. Here we go. This is a simple one. I would like to know this, too. I mean, I know you probably don't string them as often, but how often do you get your rackets strung now that you're playing tennis again? What strings and tension do you prefer?
Well, I was playing today with our friend of the podcast, Richie, who has been on a couple times. And I had just given my friend Scott, a couple rackets to string. And I had played with this racket today for the second time. And I'd broken a string already. So I'm playing 6 days a week. And I play for 45 minutes or thereabouts on clay. We never miss a ball. So I'm going through two rackets every 10 days or every week, and I still go back and I still use the 17 gauge Babolat string if Babylon out there, you're breaking me. If you could send me a few coils, that would be great. But no, I'm just kidding. But I'm and I string it, and I hate to even admit this, but I used to string it around 55, 56 pounds. And now I'm stringing it at 38 pounds, 35 pounds. And because I need that little extra trampoline effect off the racket that the old racket that I use gives me. So, I mean, it's but it feels good to me and to my game and the way I play now, and it allows me to, you know, play with a, you know, instead of putting so much effort into it, allows me to play with a little less effort, which is easier on me physically. So, yeah, 35, 36, whatever pounds, but I don't recommend that.
Right.
you got to get your own feel.
Yeah. I think there's one player on tour who, every time they talk about him, I always think about you a little bit. Also a lefty, Adrian Mannarino. We've talked about him a little bit before. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like strike you as a big hitter. But like he has wins over like a lot of really big hitters, good players, and he's probably playing some of the best tennis, you know, now in his mid 30s, in his whole career. And I just looked it up real quick, just like I don't know what he strings it at normally, but it said last year, at the 2023 Del Rey Open, he strung his rackets at a hilarious 19 pounds.
Oh my God! Well, that
isn't that crazy.
I mean, if he can control that, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah. But I think he's doing what you do, where it's like you don't want to have to swing as hard, and you know maybe you don't have that muscle or whatever. Aren't 6'4" like some of these guys? So you need the racket to do some of the work for you.
Right, and it's all feel.
Right.
I mean, at 19 pounds. I mean, that's spaghetti. to have the feel of that ball coming off something that, you know, that's the strung's, you know, at that gauge. Mm-hmm. Oh my God! And next time he's playing anywhere, I might have to go watch him play, because that would be something to see.
Yeah, it's crazy because like people, you know, using the racket, but also that means you got to be able to gauge it, because that thing can fly. Like that thing could take off. Like a lot of the strings and the way the rackets are nowadays, the guys swing as hard as they can, and because of like, you know, the spin and the grip of the strings and everything, it's always like dipping near the baseline. Where it's like if you're stringing at 19 or 35 pounds or whatever you guys are, it's like you got to be careful, because that thing can end up in the fence.
Right.
You know.
Well, from him maybe, but not from me.
Not from you. Yeah, not from me. Never.
I'm swinging with everything I got, and I can't get it to the service line anymore. but I, you know what though, Brett? It's funny that I'm enjoying playing. Yeah, I don't play a lot, but I play enough to get a good sweat and feel good about, you know, walking off there with, you know, and getting some good cardio. I'm enjoying playing now more than I ever have.
Really?
And the reason I say that is because I'm not expecting anything. I don't expect, you know, to hit it in, to hit it out, to, you know, all I'm looking to do is to make solid contact and to hit the ball in the middle of the racket. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, playing with no pressure. I mean, there was times in my career also that, you know, shit, I just cut loose. I was playing with no pressure, and what a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, to hit it and say, you know, and I hit one right and I say, oh my God, you know, and then the next one I kind of shank, you know, and I'm saying, oh, you putts.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, but I have a conversation with myself, which kind of, you know, when I walk on there, I don't know what to expect, but I walk off of there feeling like, shit, I've, you know, accomplished something decent that I was looking to do, which was to, you know, not miss a ball, which was, you know, which is my first and foremost thought in my mind. And two is to hit the ball solid, you know, and if I can do that, then, you know, I don't move anymore. And, yeah, I mean, you know, you've seen it, and it's, you know,
what I play
now is not what it's not what I call tennis. You know that.
Yeah. Whatever, but you go do, whatever. You're like short selling yourself. You go out there, you don't miss a ball for an hour.
Right.
You hit every ball deep. You hit every ball right in the middle of the strings. Get over yourself. Don't short sell yourself. Like, yeah, I know you do. I'm happy that you're able to play again with the Achilles and all the stuff you had to go through there for a little while.
getting old ain't for sissies. I'm telling you that. But
avoiding having to get the surgery is big. The PRP was big.
I've been lucky so far. I've had a few bad results, but I've had a few good ones too. And hopefully we get that with your mom.
Yeah. Give me the update there.
I'm going to give you a quick update. You know, we were at the doctor yesterday, and hopefully we can try a few things to improve, her feeling and not have to go through the replacements now. You
know,
eventually
surgery.
Somewhere down the road. No surgery. So hopefully we can do things to avoid that. But, eventually, it all happens and it will down the road. But if you can avoid it, let's try to do it. And if not, we'll take care of it. But, it's interesting that, we're like an old car engine, we got to keep us up to date and parts wear out.
Yeah. We're like made up of a bunch of parts.
Yeah.
We just
got to keep them oiled up and greased up and keep them moving in the right direction and take care of it. But man, oh man, it's every day you get up and I wake up, I take that first breath. I'm a happy guy, at least I'm going, but things happen in a hurry. But hopefully we can avoid these surgeries and get your mom back dancing and doing what she loves to do.
That would be big. That'd be big. Two more questions. One other thing that you mentioned that I like was lowering expectations. Like if you don't have a ton of it, like in every part of life, I'm trying to do that, because you find out that most of the things that disappoint you in life, you've put too heavy or too high expectations on. You're expecting too much out of people, out of this, out of that, out of this. You know what I mean? So if you lower your expectations, less chance of being let down and disappointed. So it's like funny to hear you talk about it in tennis, where like for so many years, you always had some sort of underlying pressure because it's what you did for a living and you're always, your ranking and this and that and all the stuff that comes in being a competitive sport for so long. So it's interesting to hear you talk about it and phrase it like that.
Yeah. But if you don't set something, out in front of you, to have a goal and to try to reach that, it doesn't matter how important it is, how high it is or whatever, just, something to reach for is, for me has always been important, whether it's, tennis wise or health wise or family wise or, investment wise or whatever, you always got to have something out in front of you to try to do. You can't be, satisfied with being just stagnant of where you are. And if you can do that, then, to improve things, to make things better.
It must be nice too, to where like I can just go hit, Like you can just go hit because you want to run a little and play a little tennis. There's no like, I have to win. I have to get back this tournament, this ranking, this money, whatever, like all the stuff that you were used to probably for 40 years of your life.
Yeah. But I don't need that, anymore. I've done that. I've been there and done that.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
And was quite successful at that. I felt very lucky that I was able to do one thing well and be as good at that as I could so that I could look back and say, I've done everything that I could to make it possible for my family. And to this day, I'm still very happy with that. I had such a run that for 20 years, and then I had 10 years of a senior tour, which was, probably as much, if not more fun than the regular tour with all my buddies and hanging and where the pressure was off and the fun that we had, that I look back and I say, what else could I have done? So I was very satisfied with that, all through. I mean, that's not saying that I'm satisfied with my life. No, I'm not. I mean, I'm still trying to improve my life and to improve, a lot of things that go on during my daily activities. But, what I've done in the past was, was a thrill and I loved every minute of it. But, hey, that's in the past. Your thoughts?
No, my thoughts are nothing. I was just trying to give you like a compliment on like just the lower expectations. It wasn't that deep. It was just like, it must be nice to have had to do something.
I had to go deep on that, but
I just meant like, you know, when you have to do something, it must be nice to want to do the thing. You know what I mean? Kind of like, you know, if it's your job, like somebody does a job and they're a fisherman and then they retire and then they want to go fish sometime. You know what I mean? It's like, that's all right. I meant. Like,
No. I understood exactly what you said, but I felt that I had to go a little deeper because the way my life has changed over the last 30 years. Yeah, you know, and you know, what was important to me at one time is not so important to me anymore. You know, and the importance of, you know, family and friends and health and, you know, things that matter on an everyday basis. It's funny how your life changes, you know, because when I was young, I was bulletproof. You know, I mean, there's nothing could affect me. You know, I go out, I travel, I hop on a plane, I go from, you know, Tokyo to Brazil to, you know, London. You know, I mean, nothing could affect me. You're bulletproof. And then all of a sudden, you know, all of a sudden you're saying, whoa, you know, pull in those reins a little bit, you know, and as much as I love I keep going back to what my grandmother, your great grandmother, Tumam, used to say to me. She goes, you go out and give it everything you have for the first half of your life, for the first half, so that you can enjoy the second half. And I've never forgotten that, because I was willing to do everything because I have more fun. You know, the older you guys get, you and your sister and hanging with your mom after 46 years and all that, the more fun I have, because at the beginning, I missed you guys a lot. I was traveling a lot. I was gone 45 weeks a year and missing you guys. And you know, I missed so much. That, you know, now anything that I can grab hold of is twice as important. I don't know. Should I shut up?
No, yeah.
Well, I got one time for one more question. You got one more?
I got one more. This is a funny one. You ready for this one?
Okay.
Chad Onkin asks, Jimmy Connors and Brett, I got both of your autographs in Orlando in about 1987-1988 at a Payne Weber tourney. Jimmy signed a T-2000 and Brett was walking around with his bodyguard. He signed on a sports card. I still have both. You are one of my sports heroes, Jimmy.
Bodyguard? You had a bodyguard?
I'm trying to figure out who that must have been. 87, 88 in Florida.
I don't know. I thought you were my bodyguard at the time.
That's funny.
I don't know, but it'll see 87... You were like 8 years old.
Yeah, 8 or 9 or something. You know,
so, yeah, 8 or 9 years old. But I mean, that was the time when you it started traveling with me a little bit on your own too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, your sister was little, and your mom took care of your sister, and you were got out on the road with me, and traveling and spending some time out outside of the house. So yeah, that could be possible. But wow, I don't know. I want to know who your bodyguard was.
That's why I kind of asked it. Like, it is maybe Mark. The funny thing
is maybe
Mark Brody, our friend. Who's the funny thing is people always think we had like a bodyguard. Where it's like, no, we just have like a tall or a big friend. You know what I mean? It's just like the people who have been called our bodyguards, like Doug Henderson, right, in New York. It's like, why? Because he's 6'1", you know, like it just, or like Mark. Mark was a big guy, like a little, you know, a little chubby. We called him Chunker for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a bodyguard. Right. He's not protecting me, dude. Like, you get him in a sprint, it's going to end quick, you know?
Well, we've had a lot of friends over the number of years, Brett, that traveled with us.
Yeah.
You know,
It could have been Lel.
Yeah. You know, my age, my friends, you know, your age, your friends, maybe a little bit older. You know, so I mean, we've had you know, when we'd go on the road and it was just me and you. I mean, you know, I had to go and play and practice and take care of my business to get ready to play the matches. So you know, when you were young, I mean, you need somebody to to hang with you.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, you know, could have been one of your friends who was a little older, Mark, being one of them, and you know, to go and hang, and also we were friends of their families too.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, so, the whole family might have been there. They just didn't see them. They just saw the one, they just see Mark or whatever.
Right. So, right.
It's funny.
Right.
But, I just thought that was funny. Yeah. Me signing autographs.
When it comes to the myth or the legend, what do you print?
The legend. Or the myth. Which one is it?
By the myth.
Yes. That's funny.
I don't know.
I remember when people would ask me to sign something, I would always say this. I remember always saying, like, this is worth less now that I did that. And then I would like hand it back to him.
Oh my God.
All right. One more quick one.
Go ahead.
Okay. This one's David Hopkinson. I thought this one was kind of fun just because we'll be on the grass here in about another month or so. Brett, what was it like for Jimmy competing in the old grass court tournaments in England? I saw Jimmy at Beckham Cricket Club back in the 70s. Must have been quaint changing in a cricket club after playing the slams in all their glory and all the other quirky things he had to adjust to.
Hey, listen. I mean, not every place that we played back in the old days was five star. Right. You're playing in changing of locker rooms. I mean, I'm going to go back to the Australian Open back in the early 70s when I played. That was
I think he's
way less than five star.
Yeah, I think he's projecting like now's tournaments on like back then. Like the slams might not have been that much of a difference. Like a cricket club or the nice grass court, like Queens and stuff, were pretty nice too, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, compared to back in the day, I mean, I I'm going to say this, and I may be kicked in the balls for this, but the court at Queens that my friend David used to take care of was as good, if not better, than the center court at Wimbledon. Yeah, I mean, some places you go to play, but back then the grass was so different, and the surroundings and everything was so different than it is now. Yeah, but man, I mean, to get a court that gave you a bounce was amazing. You know, now every court gives you a bounce. Yeah, right. Listen, I wouldn't change anything from playing back then. It made everybody a better player because you had to adjust, to grass or to the clay or to the clay in the United States or to the indoor, on a very fast slick surface or whatever. That I think that's what kind of appealed to a lot of people back in the 70s and the 80s, which said, hey, listen, I like watching the Stasi play and I want to try that. And McEnroe the way he volleyed or Borg with his topspin or whoever, that they would think about going out and trying to play like that, Brett, only because, not every match was the same. And so it gave them a variety and an opportunity to pick what they like to do. Made tennis a little more interesting.
Yeah. And do you remember like seeing the cricket bats and like the different outfits or like, were the pictures on the wall, all cricketers and that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, after I won Wimbledon in 74, my manager at the time, Bill Reardon, the next morning got me up and we went over into Hyde Park where, guys were playing cricket and he got me involved in the game and put me in the pads and with the bat and said, see if you can hit the ball,
could you hit
cricket,
it?
I don't have to answer that, do I?
No, you don't.
No. I mean, but it's amazing. I'm trying to think what they call it—a googly, but I mean the way they spin the ball in there and the way it moves off the turf and everything—it's it's like a Roscoe Tanner serve or McEnroe serve or whatever the bounce and the spin and the way the way it moves and all that, and it's pretty amazing. But it was fun going and kind of dressing up and you know, getting into the part. But even more important, it was fun watching the guys who knew what they were doing play.
Right.
It was fun.
Look at you pulling out the name. In the game of cricket, a googly refers to a type of delivery bowled by a right arm leg spin bowler. It is different from the normal delivery for a leg spin bowler in that it is turning the other way. The googly is not a variation of the typical off-spin delivery. Look at you pulling it out. The googly.
Look,
I like sports
look
that have terms
that.
Like googly woogly and doogly. I like that kind of stuff. I mean, I got a
my,
mini golden doodly. So.
My education shows no bounds.
Nice. I love it.
I love you, son. I miss you. I'm glad you're having such a good time. And give Melwin a hug. And you guys enjoy the rest of your vacation. But in the meantime, keep those questions coming because we love being a part of all our listeners and what they have on their mind. And follow me at Jimmy Connors on Twitter, at Brett_Connors on Twitter, at ADV Connors, our podcast, and send everything into my Facebook. And we like to answer the questions.
That sounds good. Yeah, love it. Leave us a 5-star review if you like what you hear. And give us some good off-the-wall topics. Because, the reason you leave us questions and maybe we don't answer them is because we've either done it more than once or they're the same question a lot. So surprise us. Give us some topics or links to stories that you see throughout the week. Doesn't always have to be tennis. Or if you think there's a way to tie it into tennis, hit us up on this Facebook. Let us know. We love you guys. And we'll check in with you next week. Peace.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.